Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. For our radio audience tuning in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, we welcome you. For those joining us on the East Coast in Atlanta at 106 Live, we're glad you all could join us. As well as those tuning in through blogtalkradio.com, we thank you all for tuning in as well. Dr. Andy Lazarus is with us today. We're going to talk to Dr. Lazarus not only about his new book, Curing Medicare, A Doctor's View on How Our Healthcare System is Failing Older Americans and How We Can Fix It, but what he wants all of us, no matter who we are or how we may see our role in the world, what he wants us to know about our own responsibility and what we can do as well. This is a topic that we hear a lot about today. We're going to talk to Dr. Lazarus not only about the writing of this book, but also what it's been like for him already to see the conversation taking place around it. Dr. Lazarus, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Glad to be here, Cyrus.
Okay, the pleasure is definitely all mine. I was saying to you before we went on here, it's one of those books that I read with a lot of interest because as someone who was the primary caregiver for my grandmother the last 9 years of her life, Medicare was a big part of her life, especially in helping her and being able to take care of her responsibilities. It is the case for people around this country. What has it been like for you, as you've even said in the book, I mean, what has it been like for you to open up this dialogue and then as a medical professional to be able to share things that could actually work to help to make Medicare better?
You know, it's been great to have the dialogue. A lot of the information I have in the book is actually part of dialogue I've had with my patients for many years. And I hear some of the things people really like about Medicare, because Medicare is an absolutely fantastic insurance that saved countless lives. But I also hear some of the frustrations. And, you know, one of the things that's been very frustrating is that a lot of what patients really want and need are things that Medicare won't provide. And yet, if Medicare provided it, we'd be out of the financial mess that we're in. And they're real common sense things that would help people and save a tremendous amount of money at the same time. And so that's been a big part of, you know, writing this book and hearing what people say. And a lot of my patients have read the book, and having them talk about it has been useful. And so, you know, the dialogue is percolating out there, and it's been going in all different directions, which confuses people. But I do think, you know, hopefully doctors and patients will get together and start actually having a larger role in what's going on.
Yeah. There are three sentences in the chapter, My Boss, that you wrote, Dr. Lazarus, that I actually want to read, because I think this is really important, because a lot of times, unfortunately, what we hear in the debates, we hear about the problem. We don't necessarily always hear about the other side of that, and that is, what are you going to do? What is the solution? Is there a solution? You say this in the book, for those of you who have the print edition on page 17, as we will see, Medicare in its current incarnation is both unsustainable and counterproductive in the quest to achieve the high-quality, cost-effective health care that most doctors and their patients crave. That is an important thing. And then you go on to say this, Medicare, we must move our gaze to the doctor's office and see how the current system and its complex array of reforms color the interaction between doctor and patient, between patient and the healthcare delivery system, between quality geriatric care, and the realities of what Medicare offers its recipients. And then you go on to say, I think that it's such an important thing. When we look at it in that context, I believe we are moving in a very dangerous direction, but one that can be easily righted with the input of doctors and patients rather than pundits and professional reformers. And that, to me, is an important point, because you build on that throughout the book. How important is it for doctors to be a part of the conversation?
I think it's tremendously important, and the, you know, unfortunate reality is that most doctors who are part of the conversation are not doctors who are seeing patients on a regular basis. I know primary care doctors, who are the doctors who really should be the main part of this conversation, are a burnt-out group of people. And I just in my own community tried to organize a group of primary care doctors. I sent out 200 letters, we made phone calls to offices, and we got one person who was interested in it. This is, you know, there's a group of people who say they've had enough already. But really, you know, and I say it in my book, if you put some primary care doctors together, we could have this thing fixed by lunchtime. Because, you know, the solutions are real easy. And there are a lot of, you know, a lot of factors that are making it so that Congress and Medicare are not acting in the right direction. But I think those could be easily overcome with some just clever thinking too. But yeah, I wish, you know, I wish especially primary care doctors were more involved here.
Right. So, you know, I think, and I should say for audience out there, and I always tell my audience, Dr. Lazarus, I'm a very simple guy. I grew up in Mississippi. I like things that are easy to understand. This book definitely falls in that category for me, so I know it will for a lot of our audience out there. Was that also important for you? Because it can, I think, part of the confusion that happens so many times is that we get so bogged down in things that the general public don't even understand. Was it really important for you in writing Curing Medicare to make it as easy to read and easy to understand as possible?
You know, sadly, Cyrus, I'm simple too, and you know, I can't write anything complex because that's just how I think. You know, I'm one of those guys who, when you know, I talk to my patients about things, I use words like heart attack and stroke instead of myocardial infarction and cerebrovascular accident, like a lot of doctors do, because that's just my thought process is simple. But you know, the problem we have with the medical system as it is now is that the information that many patients are getting is not only complicated and confusing, but it's just dead wrong, because it's presented in a format that exaggerates benefit and minimizes risk of intervention. You know, to give an example, there was a recent study of blood pressure lowering that made the front page of most newspapers, and it talked about if you get your blood pressure below 120, then you will have a 30% decreased risk of heart attack and a 40% decreased risk of death. And those are called relative numbers. You know, you have to ask 40% of what? And when you actually look at the real numbers, about 3 people out of 1,000 actually benefit from this kind of intervention. That means 997 don't. But even more than that, a large number of people out of 1,000 ended up with kidney failure, with dangerous low blood pressure, with dizziness, confusion, fatigue. And so Medicare has kind of taken that 120 number and made it into policy that we're supposed to be doing. But, you know, as a geriatric doctor, I not only like to give my patients accurate numbers, which I try to do throughout this book as well,
right,
but I also like to realize that each person is very different. So what's a good blood pressure for one person is not a good blood pressure for another. And so we have to take, you know, real numbers, real statistics, explain them in a way that everyone could understand, and then realize there's no right answer. Medicine is very confusing, and there's a lot of uncertainty involved in every single decision you make. And we have to realize that, and ultimately doctors and patients can talk and make good decisions based on that kind of information. We use a 1,000-seat theater. A friend of mine, Eric Rifkin, and I wrote another book looking at health outcomes, and we use this 1,000-seat theater to show how many people benefit and how many people are harmed by different interventions. And so I use that in my own practice, and I use that in this book as well. And I feel people can understand that much better than some of these crazy statistics that are tossed around.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, there is the other side of this, Dr. Lazarus, I think we have to talk about, and that is some things that may sound good or may initially look good on paper don't always end up being for the best. I want to talk about that next in the chapter, quality and value in the book. But for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm excited to welcome to our program today Dr. Andy Lazarus. We're talking to him not only about his new book, Curing Medicare, A Doctor's View on How Our Healthcare System is Failing Older Americans and How We Can Fix It, but also what it's been like for him to be a part of a very important conversation. You talk about in the book about the Affordable Care Act, Dr. Lazarus, and of course, you know, there are, you know, many who have said, okay, this is an opportunity, you know, for people who have not been insured to be insured, and of course, all these great things that are going to come from it, and not to say that that's not the case, but one of the things that you talk about in the book, and I'll read just a part of this on pages 172 and 173 again, for those who have the print edition of the book, you write this: many are emanating from the government through Medicare's Innovation Center and the Affordable Care Act. As a practicing physician, I have been bombarded by a host of new rules and regulations. Some are so poorly explained to me that I am forced to pay consultants to walk me through the process. Some are so poorly executed that they simply are not possible to carry out. To this point, you go on to say this: for me, it has thwarted my ability to deliver appropriate low-cost care that many of my patients seek. And again, thinking that something is going to fix a problem, I think, is one thing. But what has it been like for you to say about the importance of when something isn't working, Dr. Lazarus, the importance of addressing it and trying to fix it?
Yeah, I mean, the point of the Affordable Care Act, which, again, our president has to be lauded for doing what he could to expand health coverage, which is a huge battle, and it's been so for almost a century. But it introduced a lot of regulations that affect us in the office, and a lot of its focus is what's called protocol-based medicine, which means that we are giving a checklist of things to do. We have to get your blood pressure below a certain amount. We have to put you on a cholesterol medicine if you have a certain cholesterol. We have to do a series of tests, screenings, lab tests on a regular basis. And if you see your doctor just staring at the computer screen while he or she is visiting you, and you're not getting your answers, any answers to your questions, it's because the doctor is basically checking these boxes off and spending a lot of time making sure to comply with these regulations. Again, medicine is an individualized practice that there is no right answer. Some people may benefit from going on a cholesterol medicine, a statin cholesterol medicine, but we also know a lot of people, especially as they get older, are harmed by them. They get muscle weakness, they get fatigue, they might actually get memory loss. So it's not right for everyone. And to have just yes-no ways of practicing medicine, which are what protocols are, has been very deleterious. And really, that's what's been going on under both Medicare reform and the Affordable Care Act. Yeah, and there are definitely easy solutions that are not being addressed. One of the biggest ones is that, if I have a patient who comes to me very ill and they're elderly and they'd like to be treated at home for their illness, and we know in many, many conditions, home treatment is safer, more effective, and far less expensive than hospital treatment. But nothing in the reform efforts or in Medicare allows me to treat people at home. Everything pushes people into the hospital. And that one aspect alone, if you fixed it, which could be done tomorrow, would save the system enough money that it can go on indefinitely. And the fact that it's not being addressed at all is very frustrating.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, too, I think the other side of this is, and I thought about this when I was prepping for your segment, Dr. Lazarus, my grandmother, I mentioned being her primary caregiver almost for the past decade. She died in 2014, and she was on dialysis actually for 9 years. She died when she was 90 years old, and she actually went on dialysis when she was almost 81. What I thought about when I got to that part of the book, I thought about, of course, the conversation that the family had about her going on dialysis at that age, and the pros and the cons. That is something that a lot of families have to think about. Do you think that also, unfortunately, is something that happens? And I won't say understandably so, but I mean, it's almost what I want to say, because, you try to do what is best, but a lot of times, as you talk about in the book, Dr. Lazarus, sometimes decisions are made, people are put in positions, put on things like dialysis without really thinking about the full cost, not only, of course, financially, but also, of course, to that person.
Yeah, I mean, what we're become is a very interventionalist society. And it's very possible your grandmother benefited from dialysis, and that'd be great. As long as it was a decision that she made, she understood the consequences of going on dialysis and the consequences of not going on dialysis. Because I have a lot of patients who are put on dialysis who, frankly, don't have to be put on dialysis. They could, with just some adjustments in medicines and lifestyle changes, could do just fine without the dialysis. So we're told, for instance, that if we have a stent put in our heart, let's say we go to a cardiologist and find that we have a blockage of 85%, and then we're wondering, should we put the stent in? And it might be your grandmother who has that happen, because people do stress tests all the time. And it seems logical, it's 85% blocked, let's put in a little metal piece and open it up. But again, that's a decision that carries with it a lot of weight, because, first of all, we know from evidence that putting in that stent does not help people live longer or avoid a heart attack. And secondly, now you're on a lot of medicines because of the stent that actually could be dangerous. And so from a personal standpoint, as people try to push procedures on you and push medicines on you, some of them are effective and some of them aren't. But unfortunately, there's such a barrage of people telling you that you need this and that, whether it's watching TV and watching all the drugs you better have to stay alive, or whether just going to your doctor or reading the newspaper. it seems like around the corner is something else to just make you live longer, live better, and just defeat aging itself. And you know, what that does, not only in the cost of Medicare, but the more of these things you do, the more side effects and possible complications you're tossing at a patient who would probably be better off without all that intervention. And you're also creating a system where people stop relying on themselves to get better, but start relying on other people to get them better. And that also is unfortunate, because so many conditions that older people have are best served by self-help, by exercise, by socialization, by minimizing medicines. And that's not the way that, you know, the world works. And so whatever doctor talked even to you about your grandmother, you know, it's really important that they talk about the whole person. And not, if you're talking to a kidney doctor, just say, well, here's this one little thing we could fix. You know, the bigger question is, how is it going to affect you overall, your quality of life, and also your length of life both?
Exactly, exactly, and a very important conversation. And you're exactly right. And Dr. Lazarus, I think, you know, for my grandmother, it was the right thing for her. And I think, you know, for so many others, of course, you know, that is decisions, of course, that they will have to make. But I think, like, as you're saying, the conversation is so important, so that, you know, you're able to know, you know, what the pros and the cons are, and that you can be able to make a decision that is best for all involved. And I think the other thing that I thought about this chapter, the chapter is excessive specialization, expectation, and litigation. You give other examples as well. Another former guest on this program, the author of the book Watch Your Back, you quote him in this chapter. And I think there are so many things that are going on in our lives that, of course, people, for one thing, we are easy to get scared. For those who, you know, do go to the doctor, there's always a concern of, okay, well, what if it ends up being something, you know, that I don't want to hear? But I think, you know, the important thing that I got away from the book, and I'm curious as to your thoughts, is the importance of being informed and knowing, of course, about the process, but also knowing yourself and knowing what's available. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think, you know, the two most important things that I take away when I wrote this book and did the research were, one, the thing I mentioned already, which is to give patients more choice in terms of their care, especially when it comes to being treated at home versus a hospital as they get older. But the second thing, which is just crucial, is that patients are informed, that they get good information, not these crazy statistics that doctors and newspapers and pharmaceutical companies feed them, but they're given actual numbers. They're told there's no right or wrong answer. When we look at most interventions, we find that maybe 1% or 2% of people at most will benefit from these interventions. Usually it's less than that, and that 1% or 2% of people will be harmed by these interventions. And if you throw enough interventions together, the harm actually accelerates. So, you know, we have to give people a realistic view that there aren't miracles out there to help them move on, and they have to pick and choose which things are best for them. And the only way they can do that is to get actual information, which is really lacking. And, you know, when I talked about the protocols that Medicare is imploring us or forcing us to follow, none of them deal with that. None of them deal with providing patients with information. None of them deal with shared decision-making between doctor and patient. All of them just have a basic template of there being one right answer and one wrong answer, which is just so contrary to the way the practice of medicine really is. So, yeah, I would love there to be systems in place in Medicare reform that would insist, for instance, if someone went for a cardiac stent, that they would have to meet with some other doctor or other professional who could tell them the risks and benefits of that stent, someone who's not being paid. Cardiologist is paid approximately $2,500 to put in a stent, a process that takes about an hour. So they're not going to tell you not to do it. I mean, that's just human nature. So we need someone else who's going to be paid to have that discussion with you. And by the way, cardiologists should not be paid that much to put in a stent. And those decisions about how much doctors are paid sits in a small room in the American Medical Association, where they make those decisions in a secret committee. And, you know, again, something that could be easily changed. And so if doctors aren't paid excessive amounts to do procedures, it's very clear we would not have all these procedures pushed on people. So a lot of little changes that can be made to reduce all this fear that's being injected into the discussion about what the best health care is as you get older.
For sure. You say another powerful thing in the chapter, redefining thorough. And I thought this was interesting as well, because it goes to talking about what a good doctor is. And you say this, again, on the print edition on page 213, a good doctor is one who knows you well, who holds your hand, and who helps guide you through the medical theater in which you are enjoying the final act. A good doctor has the guts to put on the brakes. When we back off, almost everything improves. To that point, you go on to say in this chapter, if we intelligently curb care by allowing patients to make reasonable choices, we're not only going to save Medicare, we will also be saving lives. And that, to me, is really, I mean, the big thing, the big part of this, the human aspect, which sometimes, unfortunately, gets lost in the talking points and a lot of what we hear out there. So, you know, for individuals like myself, just regular everyday folks, and like yourself as well, Dr. Lazarus, what is your hope when they finish reading this book? And I think it's such a great resource for families and for individuals to know, of course, what's going on when it comes to, I mean, what we see when it comes to medicine, especially Medicare, but also in just in knowing how to care for ourselves and our loved ones.
You know, I think part of the book when I wrote it was based on what we could do in terms of policy to change, you know, the reforms going on and actually have more common sense reform that will enable Medicare to survive indefinitely and to provide patients with more choice and a better quality of their health care. But a large part of this book, as you're surmising from all the things you're reading to me, is just to help patients and their families get through this medical morass that they have to get through, to teach them how to read newspapers and look at, you know, information that's given to them, to help them with their conversations with their doctors so they could actually have a reasonable conversation and understand risk and benefit. That's part of it is, you know, part of it is that frustrating policy issue area that, you know, unfortunately, with all the special interests and with all the politicization of Medicare, is going to be tougher to achieve. But the part that's personal, that relates to the doctor-patient relationship and what people can do in the doctor's office, I think is very achievable. And I really, more than anything else, would like to empower patients to be able to understand what's good, you know, how to interpret data, how to know what's good and bad, what kind of things are out there. And when you go into your doctor's office, you're in charge. I think that's the most important thing. So all the information you can get and all the information you could derive from talking to your doctor is going to help you make good decisions. And, you know, there's no right answer, but you'll make the best decision for you. And I think a large chunk of the book talks about ways you can do that.
For sure, for sure. A lot of great information on the great conversation with you. Again, everyone, Dr. Andy Lazarus has been our guest for this segment. He's the author of the book, Curing Medicare, A Doctor's View on How Our Healthcare System is Failing Older Americans and How We Can Fix It. It's available through our friends at Amazon.com. You all can get it there. And you can stay connected with Dr. Lazarus through his website he set up for the book. It's www.curingmedicare.com. Again, that's www.curingmedicare.com. Dr. Lazarus, thank you so much for the time today. I really appreciate it. And look, it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime.
Well, Cyrus, thanks so much. It was a great conversation. Really appreciate it.
Well, hey, I appreciate the time for sure. Definitely want to thank our good friends at Gail Leander Public Relations for setting up this conversation with us. I want to thank you, our audience, for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. For our radio audience, you all stay where you are. There's more Conversations Live to come for you. For those joining us online, we are going to lose you, so if you came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Dr. Lazarus, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media sites, so head over to facebook.com/CyrusWeb. Or go over to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You can click on the link there, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.